So anyway, so that's godly sorrow. Yes?
I'm concerned about anger, which is generally, in my opinion, you just basically glossed over with one word. Now that's such a powerful, anger is so powerful. You're giving all this time to all these other things, but you said one word about anger. And I think there's a whole lot more to the opposite of that than just one word. I mean, when you look at it, what really is the opposite of anger? Gentleness? That doesn't mean anything by itself.
Well, you'll have to take that up with St. John Cassian, since he does use that. It's true that that's not the only thing. Part of the thing is just because anger in itself is such a huge topic, I don't really have time to discuss everything about it. But if I can act gently, lovingly, courteously to a person instead of acting out of my anger, eventually that's going to take hold. But in the meantime, it is going to show me what I'm angry about eventually. And that's the thing, is if you just act as if you had these virtues. Act as if you were gentle, as if you were compassionate. And then see what happens.
Practice,
yes. Practice makes perfect. God makes perfect. But, most of us aren't going to get there you have to do what he says. He's not going to perfect us if we refuse to follow what he told us to do. If we have time, we can get back and talk a bit more about it. The opposite of despondency, and this is in St. John Cassian, and it's surprising, at least it surprised me, it's courage. But if you stop and think about it, if you're the little mama mouse who has to keep going back and going back and going back and cleaning that nest, that really does take courage. That thing in my soul that says, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do this again by the grace of God. Here I am and I'm in this monastery and these are the problems I have in this monastery, but I'm going to stay here and I'm going to do what God asked me to do. Now, most of you I know have heard me tell the story of the monk who went from monastery to monastery. And because in the first monastery, they all loved him except for one monk, and he found that completely unsupportable. So he leaves, and he goes to a second monastery where half of them love him and half of them hate him. And it's like, well, this is much worse. So he goes to the third monastery where one loves him and the rest of them think he's a complete jerk. So finally, he realizes that this is not a good progression, and instead of going to the fourth monastery where everybody hates him, he stays at the third monastery and he writes himself a note that says, I will endure all things for the sake of Christ. And he puts it in his pocket and he stays there. And that takes courage. And so if I am despondent, to do the deed at hand, even if it's a little one, even if it's, doing the, cutting up the carrots because I've been told to cut them up, but I'm so overwhelmed that that's more than I can think of doing. The courage of going, okay, by the grace of God, I'm going to do it. So now the opposite of vainglory is meekness. And St. John of the Ladder gives a whole bunch of descriptors, not definitions, but descriptors. And one of the descriptors of meekness is a mind consistent among honor or dishonor. So the meek person isn't, this little, oh, it was all my fault, oh, I'm so sorry. Christ is meek. And his meekness is that he's going He's not going to let your praise or your criticism get in the way of loving you and loving God the Father. And so the meek person is just, whatever you do, they're focusing on God, and they're you know, if you think I'm the greatest thing, that's nice. It's deluded, but that's nice. If you think I'm the worst thing, that's pretty true. But either way, that's not what it's about. So that's some little aspect of meekness. Humility, you know, when St. John of the Ladder gets into this discussion on humility, there's all these, you know, fathers saying, well, I think it's this, I think it's that. It's you know, and then finally he says, it's a virtue known to those who have it. So I don't have it, and I don't know what it is. But I know that I'm not going to get it if I don't have meekness. You know, and so if my mind is not consistent among honor or dishonor, I can act like it is. And then deal with the change, deal with what happens, because I'm acting that way and something inside me is screaming. Now, there is one last thing I wanted to say about the principal passions, you know, which is that it isn't clear-cut. The where one passion ends and another one starts isn't clear-cut. And it's also not clear-cut where one virtue ends and where another one starts. And like your concern was, Sister Pearl, it's not like there is simply one opposite of each passion. And the reasons for those, the reasons that the passions are hard to pull apart are very different from the reason that the virtues are hard to pull apart. The reason the virtues are hard to pull apart is that all virtue is God living in us. It's God's grace. It's God in his energies in us. And since he is one, all virtue is one. So, you know, if I ever am self-controlled, if I ever am chaste, if I ever am gentle, it is God expressing his life in me. And so those all run together, in a sense. Now, the reason that the passions are hard to pin down is that sin is amorphous or shapeless. Because sin doesn't have a being of its own. God didn't create sin. I'm not going to tread into the very dangerous philosophical waters that you can go into from here as to what it means to not have a being of one's own. I'm not saying sin doesn't exist, but it's a parasite. And, you know, so it just is an opportunist. And so it doesn't really have a life of its own, and you can't nail it down. Okay, so that's what I had to say about the principal passions. Then there is an alternative, much simpler scheme where you look at certain things in relation to these three powers of the soul. It was Father John Finley who was the first person I remember talking about this. And that is that the three great ascetic disciplines, the three great Lenten disciplines, right? Fasting, almsgiving, and prayer. So what do you think fasting is going to help?
Desire.
Your desiring power. Okay. What do you think prayer is going to help? The news, yeah. It's because, you know, if I'm supposed to be having all my focus, attention focused on God, then obviously I need to be praying. Now, it's maybe not quite as obvious why almsgiving is associated with the incensive power. But, you know, it is pretty hard to hate somebody that you're consistently treating lovingly. You know, if you keep doing it and keep doing it, and you're not just giving alms in the sense of throwing money at them, but if you're giving them your life, you know, if you're giving them of your soul and your being, then, you know, that will change your anger. You know, because you'll get to know that person. You'll get to see them as a real person. And, you know, the reason we dislike people is we make caricatures of them. You know, it's like, who is so-and-so? She's the person who grinds her teeth. And is that all she is? Really? You know, and whatever it is that drives us crazy about people, you know, we make that who they are. But on the other hand, you know, if we love that person, if we get to know that person and appreciate them for who they are, then it's going to be a lot harder to be angry at them because they're made in the image of God. Yes?
So are you saying that if someone that we're angry at, that we begin to become generous to them? And
yes. Yes. Now, you know, that, but again, going back to the fake it till you make it, the first time you try doing that, you're going to find all kinds of things rising up and you're going, but, you know, she's like this and she's like that. And, you know, I've tried and tried to be nice to her, you know. And so that's where we go to confession with what's inside us and get, you know, specific help for the particular things that we're having to deal with. But again, I mean, you can see that everything affects everything else. You know, we are not compartmentalized. God didn't make us such that, okay, here's anger over here, here's desire over here, and here's the noose over here, and never the three shall meet. Because we're one. And so, obviously, if I'm praying, you know, that's going to affect what I desire. If I'm fasting and taming my inordinate desires, that's going to affect how well I can pray. If I'm not, you know, ready to kill everybody around me, it's going to be a lot easier to pray. So it all interacts. Okay, so return the page. Okay, so anyway, so the reason I went into all of that was that I could then go ahead and specifically in relation to Peter, but then later on to some degree also, talk about how, you know, we're born with our noose and our angering and our desiring powers out of order. And so to get them back in order, we have to be with Christ. And the only way to be with Christ is to go to the cross. So I'm going to be looking now, after I take a break so everybody can stretch, at some things in the life of St. Peter and how he's coming to grips with the holiness of Christ and his own sinfulness, and how he comes through it. So that's what I had to say for this part. Are there any questions concerning it? Okay, so let's take what is a 5-minute break good? Okay, so let's take a 5-minute break.